Moncrief on News Talk.
You may well be aware of various studies which have concluded that Ireland is the loneliest country in Europe. One in five of us report feeling lonely some or all of the time, significantly higher than the European average. Obviously, loneliness is bad for mental health for all sorts of reasons, including a possible link between loneliness and dementia in later life. Dr. Sabina Brennan is host of the Superbrain podcast and author of Still Me, a neuroscientist's guide to caring for someone with dementia. Good afternoon, Sabina.
Good afternoon.
Is the loneliness, and I don't know, maybe it's overstating it to say it's an epidemic, is it equal among all age cohorts?
I think a lot of us tend to associate loneliness with later life, but loneliness is context dependent and it doesn't just affect older people. And what is really sort of surprising is that a recent study, OECD study, showed that younger people in Ireland were actually reporting feeling lonely. And a recent CSO figures show that in 2024, 5.6% of 16 to 24-year-olds said they felt lonely most or all of the time. And that's approximately, this is the surprising thing, that's approximately 80% higher than those aged 65 plus, where 3.1% said they felt lonely most or all of the time. So that's kind of a reversal of trends and figures, and kind of a concerning one, because, as you said, of the link between social isolation and loneliness and ill health, including risk for developing dementia in later life.
Now, I suppose one could say COVID was a big factor in this because everyone was isolated for a period of time. But yeah. I assume it's not the only factor, though.
No. Obviously, it does play for the current cohort of younger people. It plays a role, you know. But the thing is, face-to-face contact has been declining since about 2006. And you can kind of map that on to that beginning of that steep decline in face-to-face social contact, kind of links in with, you know, the first iPhone in 2007 and Facebook becoming mainstream between 2006 and 2008. So the digital technology and it's rather interesting because I've thought about this a lot, even just from a personal perspective. You know, the social connection that we get online, I wish I'd had that at the loneliest period of my life, which was when I had my first babies. There was no mobile phones, there was no internet. You were literally at home all day on your own with a baby, which was tough. So I would absolutely, you know, welcome technology. And it's not about the technology itself. It's about the fact that, young adults today are spending 50 to 70% less in-person time with friends than in the early 2000s. So we're not connecting. It's causing a distance. It's a barrier. Also then changes, and I suppose this is kind of a knock-on from COVID, but I mean, I used to do remote working before COVID anyway, so I think a lot of people did. That limits opportunities for face-to-face contact. And so too does, people commuting further distances to work. When I worked first, people hung around afterwards for a bit of socializing after work, you know, because you hopped on a bus and you lived very near. So that kind of limits opportunities. And I think something that people mightn't, necessarily think of, as something influencing loneliness, and that would be the housing crisis. I mean, loneliness isn't about who we're with. And in fact, being alone is not the same as being lonely. You can be extremely lonely amongst lots of people. In fact, actually, the psychological definition for loneliness is when there is a mismatch between the amount of social contact that you have and the amount that you need. And that differs for lots of different people. You know, I don't need a huge amount. I'm quite happy to be on my own, working away. I as a writer, you're kind of isolated, and that works absolutely fine for me. But my husband is very different. He's out and about, and he's with customers, and he needs lots of social contact. So it's about a mismatch on an individual basis. But the housing crisis, I think, means that a lot of those younger adults are still living with parents. And that means, they don't have the same control over their social environment because it's not their home, you know, so they kind of can't really freely invite friends in. Also, there's relational consequences, you know, romantic relationships. A lot of couples are still living in with their respective parents, so they're not getting that everyday intimacy that strengthens attachment and, you know, helps us regulate our emotions and really manage stress, because the stress is the key factor that links loneliness to risk for ill health, both, you know, physical, mental and brain health. And obviously in my latest book, I've written about this at length, because a lot of caregivers are isolated and you know, kind of can't leave their home and can narrow their social circle. But it's the stress, because loneliness isn't just an emotion, you know, it is a biological signal for the brain. It's a stress signal. So it's an aversive signal, what we'd call an aversive signal. It's unpleasant. It's actually no different than the unpleasant feeling of hunger. That's unpleasant so that it motivates us to eat, because we need to eat to survive. Loneliness is meant to have the exact same purpose. It motivates us to stay connected. We're social creatures and we don't do well in isolation. For some reason, loneliness kind of has a stigma attached to it. If you feel lonely, it just means you're human. You know, and you really do need to listen to those feelings and make an effort to get connected, because if you don't and you become chronically lonely, what happens is you are living in a state of chronic biological stress. And that has structural impact for your brain, for areas in your brain like the hippocampus, which is involved in memory function. And also, it changes us as individuals from rational individuals to reflexive individuals. Normally, a healthy brain, you know, you need to harness neuroplasticity, which is the brain's ability to change with learning and grow new connections. Now, when we're in a state of chronic stress, normally your frontal lobes are kind of the rational part, and they can override any irrational fears you might experience, or, you know, dampen down the stress response if there's been a false alarm. And so it normally overrides the amygdala's stress response. Now, when we become chronically stressed, that relationship changes. And in fact, neuroplasticity is suppressed in the frontal lobes and the hippocampus. And that means they can shrink, like physically, structurally, the brain changes. And then it's enhanced in the amygdala, which means that your brain, you know, goes into survival mode, and that's really toxic for cognitive function, and it interferes with sleep, it interferes with our immune response and increases inflammatory chemicals in the brain. And also then if you're lonely, you have reduced cognitive stimulation because you're not engaging with people. And that's really important for neuroplasticity in your brain. And then, you know, even loneliness is linked to higher rates of high blood pressure and cardiovascular issues. And a healthy brain is reliant on a healthy cardiovascular system for the oxygen and nutrients that it needs to function. So it has all these kind of this cascade of effects that impact on our physical, mental and brain health. So it's absolutely critical that as individuals we do something, but also I think as a society to raise awareness about it, but also to provide opportunities, community opportunities for meaningful face-to-face connection, and all the better if it's intergenerational.
What you were saying about COVID there, I can remember during COVID, and lots of people did it, that you'd have Zoom meetings with your friends. Personally, I gave them up because I just found them, it wasn't the same.
It's not the same.
And I found it kind of depressing. But I'm from the pre-digital era, if you know what I mean. So maybe I
do.
Felt it more in my bones that it was better to see a person face to face, whereas somebody who grew up with in that in the digital era mightn't see the difference immediately. And if they're feeling lonely, might reach for their phone, but that's not really going to, you know, that's not going to scratch that itch for them.
It's not really. And the thing is, I suppose, you know, digital connection, it was great during COVID, you know, I mean, I'm not knocking it, you know, it's just when it replaces social contact that, you know, older people, those of us from a pre-digital age, tend to use technology to as a sort of a way into arranging for face-to-face contact. And it was helpful during COVID. It would have been really scary if we didn't have that. But basically, you know, a lot of us felt really tired with those Zoom meetings. And they were kind of different than an in-meeting person, for example, because you were always on screen. Everybody could see you all the time. Yes. Do you know? Whereas you're in a meeting, you know, people tend to be looking at the person who's speaking, you know? So there kind of was lots of little stressors with that. And I mean, social connection engages all of our senses. You know, there's touch that you know, and you just don't have that in the 2D of the digital world. It's not the same. And what you described there is actually that feeling that you weren't actually getting that little buzz that we get out of social connection. That's the kind of good news part of it is, you know, that social connection actually activates the reward circuitry in our brain, and it releases dopamine when we have in-person engagement. It's very beneficial to have that social contact. It feels good. You know, we feel better when we connect with people.
Yeah, it sounds though from what you're saying that if you get into that place where you're experiencing quite severe loneliness and the various effects that has on the brain, that it becomes more and more difficult to kind of get out of that situation.
Yeah, that's a real issue. And I mean, I've been kind of, you know, working in this sort of sector for a very long time, looking at at loneliness and how we can reconnect people. And it does become quite challenging because, so basically what happens is you've got to remember we evolved over millions of years for a very different world than the world we have now. And so if we were ostracized or separated from society, the brain goes into self-preservation mode and really, you know, switches on the stress symptom, doesn't let you go into, a deep sleep. But it also impacts on our capacity for empathy. And where we'd ordinarily, you know, if you're not lonely, you chat to people and you nod, you do all those things, you know, that you do to engage with someone. But when you become chronically lonely, your brain says to you, hold on, these could be dangerous. You know, these could be an enemy. Don't be getting too close to them. You know, don't be nodding. You know, this could be dangerous. And so it actually really genuinely becomes quite hard to reconnect someone. I remember the GAA did a fabulous thing. They were concerned about older men who had stopped coming to the, you know, their central hubs where people hang out or whatever, the GAA clubs. And they contacted me because actually they were really struggling. How can we get them to connect? Because when we'd knock on their door, they didn't trust us. And that's a $64 million question. You know, and when you can understand it. So if people are alone and they're listening to radio, and we do have a lot of these stories about, you know, don't trust this person, don't do that. That becomes heightened in someone who's lonely. And so they really are fearing everybody. So I think part of it is educating through, like, radio, I think, is just a wonderful means to, you know, access those people who are at home alone and perhaps explain to them, to help them understand why they're feeling like that and that they, you know, need to take tentative steps. And those who are trying to engage them to understand where they're coming from and not say, oh, it's no wonder they're on their own. Sure, they're as rude as anything, you know, to actually understand that their brain is trying to protect them and that they will need a more gently, gently, softly, softly approach. But the key is to try and not let yourselves get lonely. And my concern is, you know, with that younger cohort experiencing loneliness, whether that becomes a way of life. And does that then, you know, change our statistics, you know, Whereas the current cohort, who might be experiencing loneliness in later life, they may not have experienced it throughout their life because they didn't have the digital age, you know, and that might have buffers and might make them, you know, they might be aware that they kind of need those connections. So, yeah, it's a big, it's not a soft issue. It's a big health issue, you know?
And do you have any instinct about, because, you know, we're the loneliest in Europe, according to the statistics. That, you know, other countries in Europe had the pandemic. They have people, they have, you know, smartphones, all those kinds of other issues. Why is it worse in Ireland, do you think, than anywhere else?
Well, I don't know. I'm not completely sure that we're the loneliest completely, but even so, why? Gosh, I don't know that distinction, you know. Because so many of the things, so many of the factors affect other countries too, as you just said. I do think where we're lacking compared to some other countries is that our socializing tends to revolve around the pub and around alcohol. Mm. And that's not great. I also think we don't have sort of central community spaces in the same way that some other countries have that revolve around activities. I mean, that's the kind of best way to do it because, you know, if people, you tend to connect with people that you have something in common with. Often that's kind of by age, but the research shows intergenerational contact benefits everyone, and it would really benefit us all when we get older as our social circle sort of dies off because we're getting older. That's one of the main reasons older people become isolated and lonely. But if we had more intergenerational contact, that wouldn't happen, you know, because you would have younger friends. And similarly, you know, younger people benefit from the contact with older people because they've different ways of looking at the world. But a key way to get people connected that doesn't depend on age is through activities, because through shared hobbies, through shared activities, kind of other barriers to connecting fall down.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that if we had more hubs that are either free or supported, it would not only address loneliness, it would address issues that we have around alcohol consumption in teen years and drug misuse in teen years. If kids kind of have opportunities for other types of new experiences, if that makes sense.
Indeed it does. Sabina, we do have to leave it there, but thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Sabina Brennan there, host of the Super Brain podcast and the author of the book, Still Me. A few comments on that. One person says, I found life very lonely since I retired. I feel I don't really need to be anywhere, so it can be hard to establish a routine. Someone else says, I never thought I would be the type of person who would ever be lonely, but I find when you're single and most of your friends and family are in relationships, you end up doing a lot of things on your own. Often people say to me, aren't you great doing that alone? But the reality is, I don't have another option. I find loneliness can be so overwhelming some days. Another text says, the same thing. What does it say? Says this person, that we are richer than ever, but lonelier than ever. We have completely lost the sense of community that we had growing up, where neighbours meant everything to each other. Our neighbours barely make eye contact or say hello these days. Someone else says, most of my friends, this is an interesting point, most of my friends would never make a phone call, but instead prefer to leave a voice note. One friend sent me a 20-minute one the other day, and maybe I'm wrong, but that doesn't feel like a fulfilling and engaging conversation. No, and, you know, I suppose people who may have grown up in that digital age are averse to something that even feels like face-to-face contact, i.e. a phone call. Cures for loneliness, if possible, volunteer in local community groups or committees, men's, women's sheds, Toastmasters, great for brain, growth at your own pace, and very sociable. Yeah, there are many Avanti groups out there doing fantastic work in exactly this regard.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.